So if you're an entrepreneur with ADHD, delayed gratification isn't necessarily your thing, right? you need to see the results right away. So, you know, the idea that you can plant a seed that will sprout in 9 months is kind of cool, but it's also pretty frustrating because you need to see the fruits of your labor relatively soon, right?
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network. Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome everyone to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset. Learn and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us. Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome everyone once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with John M. Torrens. John, what's up? I'm happy to be here with you.
I am happy to be here with you too, Ben. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Listeners, if you don't know John yet, he is an entrepreneur, a founder and president of multiple companies in healthcare and education. He is an educator at Syracuse University, SU. He is a TEDx speaker and author of Lightning in a Bottle, How Entrepreneurs Can Harness Their ADHD to Win. I'm going to presume you have ADHD as well.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's the bio, but there's always a story behind the story. You're an educator, you're an entrepreneur. Where did this drive? I like to say, you know, get the knowledge from the people who have it to the people who need it. It's exactly what you do as an educator. It's exactly what you do as a business person in many cases, and as an author. Where did that passion for education really come from? Can you recall?
It's sort of, but you know, I actually started my academic career pretty late in life. I'd actually sold my company back in 2008, and you know, being a relatively young guy at the time, didn't really know what was next. And I just happened to get linked up with a faculty member up at Syracuse University in their entrepreneurship department. And, you know, through a couple conversations on a small project we were working on, he said, "So you've got a PhD in business and you just sold your company." He's like, "Would you come teach a course for us? Because, you know, we got to cover this one course. Nobody wants to teach it." And I was like, "All right, you know, let me try it." And I fell in love with it. I just thought it was the coolest thing. And, you know, funny enough, at first I was terrible at it because I thought, well, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I've grown businesses. I just sold my business. Of course, this is going to be easy for me to teach it. But I shortly realized that teaching it and doing it are completely different. And if I really liked it, I was going to have to dedicate some time and energy to honing it as a craft. And my, you know, my first semester's teaching evaluations were just horrible. I mean, my students ripped me apart. I remember one of my favorite comments. I used to actually have it in a frame on my office wall. It said, "Torrens is the triple threat of stupidity, disorganization, and something else, and he shouldn't even be allowed on campus."
Okay.
And I was like, "All right, well, that kind of sucks. It doesn't really speak well for a future as a professor." So, you know, I started to take it a little bit more seriously, and I thought, hey, you know, being an entrepreneur is great and that will bring me some credibility to the classroom. But if I'm going to teach it, I have to become a good teacher and an educator. And then I began down that path and have really enjoyed it ever since.
It's fantastic. And now, wow, I don't even know where to start because you're a teacher and an educator, you're an author, you're also a business person. For context, give us a little bit about what you do in your business career.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a speech language pathologist by professional background. I have a master's degree in that, and that's how I started my career. And so my companies now, we do speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, special education, psychology, counseling, social work, anything a youngster with a disability would need. So we work with children birth to 5 years old with a range of disabilities, and we provide these services and we provide evaluation and diagnostic services. And we do it in three locations or three modalities. One is we have an integrated preschool in Syracuse, where we have students with disabilities and students that are typically developing, 3 to 5 year olds. We have an outpatient clinic where we see youngsters with disabilities in an outpatient setting. And we also have a home health program that, you know, we work through the early intervention department in each county, and as well as the committee on preschool special education in each school district. So that's what I do. So I've kind of taken my speech pathology background and built a business around it. So in Syracuse, we're known as Sprout Therapy Group and Connections Family Centered Therapy. And in Rochester, it's Step-by-Step Pediatric Developmental Center.
Got it. Well, so are these different businesses entirely or just kind of renaming for the location? Explain that.
Yeah, well, so I had exited a company again back in 2019. And I had a 2-year non-compete. And so when that non-compete ran out, I bought a former competitor, and that was Connections Family Centered Therapy. Mm-hmm. And then I connected with the guy who owns Sprout Therapy Group, and we decided to tie the companies together with a management services organization, which basically does all the back end work for the front end therapy companies, because you gain some efficiencies that way. So it wasn't an acquisition, wasn't a merger. We just connected on the back end, and then we partnered up to buy Pediatric or Step-by-Step in Rochester. So there's three therapy companies that are managed by the management services organization. So we do the HR, the IT, the payroll, the account, you know, all the back-end stuff besides the clinical.
That makes perfect sense. Appreciate the clarity point. I'm thinking in my head because I like to create brands and name things. And I'm like, is he just naming the same thing multiple? I know personally, like this podcast, there's Learn, Speak, Teach. There's Rochester Business Connections. There's 5 Minute Friday. There's Ben's right. Bites. There's Real Hits. With my business, there's Balbert Marketing. There's Real Business Connections Concierge. Then there's all these little things, professional doodle videos, 2DAnimatedVideos.com. All these things I've created, and not all of them are driving a ton of income. So let's talk about what I just explained, this wild, almost in some people's eyes, crazy love to create and do different things. I presume, and I actually haven't been diagnosed, but I presume I possibly have ADHD, or people with ADHD do something similar to this. You tell me, you're the expert.
Sure. Yeah. So what you've described is really typical of an entrepreneur with ADHD, and specifically the hyperactive impulsive type, not so much the inattentive type. But you know, you're drawn to sensation seeking. You like novelty. You don't necessarily get bored with things really quickly, but you're looking for the next thing, right? So it's very common. And when we see this with entrepreneurs, especially those with ADHD, that they are, they're serial entrepreneurs at a much higher rate than entrepreneurs without ADHD. So you start things, right? You find something, you solve a problem, you recognize an opportunity, and you start it. You don't think about it, or you don't overanalyze it. You don't kill yourself with this analysis. You go for it. And the thing you created before still works and it's still there. But now you're on to the next thing. And there's this really interesting dynamic with life cycles of entrepreneurship. So entrepreneurs with ADHD, their unique skills and strengths are really well suited for the early stages of a startup. where you have to hustle and flow and, you know, get employees, you've got to get vendors lined up, you got to get customers. You're like, you know, you're just moving fast and doing things. Your strengths are uniquely suited for that. Once you get to the later stages of the life cycle where it requires, you know, things like coherent use of resources and allocation of resources, policies and procedures, things like that, that's where the wheels fall off the bus a little bit. You're not as interested and it doesn't light you up and you want to kind of go on to the next thing, you know? So we sometimes get accused of having this shiny object syndrome. But in reality, we're just, you know, doing things that motivate us and that bring us joy.
You know, and God bless people that like policies and procedures and processes and data analytics, because what would the world do without them? I know personally, and a lot of people I speak with, whether they have ADHD or not, don't always have a knack. If they're in sales, business owner, biz dev, you know, they're not always looking at these specific policy and procedures that create a good business, the analytical. Well, what do you recommend to anybody who feels like they don't have a knack for that kind of thing? What would they do? What should they do?
One of the most important things is to have a really good number two, or, you know, somebody who not necessarily your business partner, but your partner in the endeavor, right? Because if you're spending your time, and I would go so far as to say you're wasting your time trying to do those things because you think you should, right? This is what a business owner needs to do, or this is what a CEO needs to do. I'm not doing it. Here's what I got to do. You're just wasting time thinking about doing it, not doing all that well, when you could be doing the things that you absolutely kick butt at that nobody else does. So find that person, find a good COO, find a good number two, find somebody who loves to do that stuff and set them free to do it. And it'll liberate you. It'll give you the time to do the things that you do really well that the other person would hate to do. So, you know, I've spent a lot of time doing that too, because you get into this, you know, cycle where you think, well, you know, as the CEO of the organization, I should really be doing this or I should be doing that. Mm-hmm. And you get this kind of internal resistance or procrastination, and you're like, well, I don't really want to do that. I don't like to do that. So the best thing I've ever done is surround myself with people who like to do those things that I don't like to do. They're really good at it, and we work well together. The other thing is a peer support group. So whatever that looks like for you, whether it's other business owners in the same situation, you know, other business groups, or even just, you know, informal, you know, sharing that you have with other professionals, a peer support group is super helpful. It's just so you understand that you're not alone. You're not walking this walk alone. Other people have been there, done that, learned from mistakes that they've made, and maybe you could avoid some yourself.
Makes perfect sense. So bring someone on, bring on a partner, a teammate, someone to handle this, or possibly if that person isn't existent in your life yet, you can still do a peer support group. What about people that are really driven and they don't want to quit early on the concept? They want to get better at focusing on these tasks that maybe aren't the visionary or the creative tasks. They want to get better. What would you tell them? You could actually just say that A and B that we just said is the best route, but what if I'm like, no, John, I want to figure this out. What would you tell me?
Right. Well, so then you're getting into the way you're wired and your physiology, right? Okay. And it's not so much that we don't want to do it. It's just, it's really hard because of our neurodiversity, right? So then you've got to start changing things. And there's two ways to look at it, or two aspects to it. One is your input, and the other is your output, right? So on input, how distracted are you? Like right now I've got three screens, but I've shut them all except for this one because I'm focusing on this interview, right? But normally I might have a stock ticker. I might have my WhatsApp for web. I've got Outlook. I'm just bombarded, right? So I've got this diet of information. But not only what you're putting into your body in terms of information, but what are you eating? What are you drinking? How well are you sleeping? All of those things have profound impacts on your ability to focus. So if you're that CEO that says, hey, I really want to improve on these things, you've got to do some things to set the table or set the stage for your body in order to do that. Alcohol consumption, reducing that is going to be super helpful. Working on more of a clean diet is going to be helpful. And then also your output. So do you have a movement practice every day? Do you do a little bit of exercise? And I'm not talking super rigorous exercise every day of the week, but do you take a walk once or twice a day? Are you up off your butt instead of just sitting in your seat all the time? Are you doing something creative that you like to do? Do you listen to music? Do you create music? Do you draw? Do you appreciate art? Those types of things are going to help you with your wiring and get you in a place where maybe you can focus and take on those other tasks more successfully. But if you're drinking coffee, eating sugar, not sleeping well, drinking a lot of alcohol, it's going to be really hard because your body's just not in the place where it's going to be ready to do that.
It makes sense, John. And that's insightful, because kind of what I was asking is like, how do I add this to my list and get better at it? It sounds like sometimes it's not adding more items to the to-do list. It's subtracting items like alcohol, sugar, getting more sleep, ultimately subtracting staying up late working to actually be physiologically better to do the exact same task even better than you're doing it before. Do I have that correct?
Yeah. And, you know, and there's, in terms of sleep science, there's these things called chronotypes, right? So some people are just more productive in the mornings. Some people are more productive after midnight, right? So it's important to understand that about yourself too. So you're not trying to do things at a time where it's really just not going to work. So understanding and appreciating and honoring your own physiology, your own circadian rhythm is going to be a big help.
Huge help. And really what you're describing is almost like delaying the gratification a little bit. I know I named all these endeavors. I have my, you know, I do a lot of things. I have my hands in a lot of cookie jars. Not every one of them is going to be a big, you know, multi-million-dollar business overnight. If I start sleeping an extra half hour, if I start cutting sugar, if I do these kind of things, I'm not going to be a fitness legend with the perfect mindset overnight. Talk a little bit more about delayed gratification, because I know a lot of people struggle with it. I do. I mean, I have a phone right in front of me. I don't need to go to a library anymore. Talk a little bit about delayed gratification and how we do it.
Well, so if you're an entrepreneur with ADHD, delayed gratification isn't necessarily your thing, right? you need to see the results right away. So, you know, the idea that you can plant a seed that will sprout in 9 months is kind of cool, but it's also pretty frustrating because you need to see the fruits of your labor relatively soon, right? So, and that's okay. Like I take a similar approach to you, where it's more like a portfolio approach to my life. Like I don't have one thing that I do and I do that only. And I do sometimes get into this headspace where I think, well, geez, what if I only did one thing and I did that thing only? Could I be really good at it? And then I think, I don't know, I'd probably just be miserable, because I what I would do is I would find something else to do to fill that time, because that, and I've tried that and it doesn't work for me, right? But yeah, I mean, delayed gratification is hard. It takes a little discipline and sometimes there's a place for it, but other times it's nice to see immediate results, you know?
It makes sense. That's a really interesting point, because if I focus on one thing, this is theoretical. If I focus on one thing and put in the reps and put in the hours, I will be better at that one thing. And if that's my business, it's going to generate income. And if I have lots of things, I might generate less overall income. I've heard this from business professionals all the time. Get really good at scaling one thing and then worry about the rest. But you brought up something that isn't really in that advice. Are you happy? Are you fulfilled? Are you like, is this one thing making you miserable? It almost sounds like you kind of need to figure out how you're wired and work based on how you're wired. You actually might make less money than the person down the street, but you don't have to do it their way, because you'd be miserable doing it their way. Am I making sense here?
Yeah, but you know, it's not necessarily this choice of focusing on one thing and doing it really well,
okay,
or making less money, right? Because I know a lot of entrepreneurs with ADHD who do tremendously well because they've got so many things going, right? I mean, if you plant, you know, 1,000 bulbs, you know, you're gonna get more flowers than if you just had one, right? Obviously, maybe not the best analogy, but part of me also feels like the time I spend on one endeavor, I'm still learning, and I can apply what I've learned from that endeavor to the next one. So in a way, I've got these parallel, multiple parallel paths where I'm still learning, maybe not doing the exact same thing over and over again, but I don't know, to me, that would be especially boring and nothing really that would excite me enough to get out of bed, right? And for me, when I get to the point with something where I'm like, all right, I just can't do this anymore, I can go on to the next thing and say, all right, this is what I'm going to focus on, you know, if I can do that. So I like the portfolio approach to my professional life. I like having multiple things, and I feel like what I learn in one area gets applied in others and vice versa.
No, it makes sense. This is kind of a sidestep, but like a generalist who has tried a bunch of things. People like to say jack of all trades in an insulting way. It's really like a generalist is someone with lots of skill sets and lots of interests, so they can tackle things holistically and they know how to do the same move 15 different ways. And then a specialist, you already kind of talked about it, they might be the person writing your terms and services and your processes and things like that. It's funny because I believe in many cases, there's a lot of things you need in leadership. We won't talk about all the things in a great leader unless you want to. You could riff on that. One thing is I feel like as a leader, you kind of do need to be a generalist with multiple interests because you want to be able to see the big picture. You want to be able not just to tell someone how to do something, but like to go and actually dabble with it yourself and basically know a little bit about every department, all that kind of stuff. Does this make sense? Is that true? How do you see like leadership and someone possibly with ADHD as a leader, how would they tackle that kind of role? And do you think it's a benefit? Or could it possibly be a deficit? I asked like 16 questions, so take that wherever you'd like, my man.
Yeah, so leaders with ADHD, they're really good at a lot of things, right? They're usually pretty good with empathy. They're generally good with people. One of the best things, one of their best attributes is this adaptability. So if you have ADHD as a leader, you can be especially adaptable. And that's really important, right? You can't be so set in your ways that you can't adapt and change to new information and new circumstances. So I think that's important. The other thing we know about people with ADHD is that they move on quickly, right? They don't suffer from anxiety for too long over something that didn't work out. They get up, they brush themselves off, and they move on, right? So they don't really get into that because they get excited by the next thing. Maybe something fails or something bad happens. They kind of do the postmortem on it. They learn from it, but it doesn't devastate them for the next 6 months. They pop their head up and they're like, oh, look over there. There's an opportunity. I'm going over there now. And they kind of forget about it. And actually, one of my favorite analogies that, you know, I work with a lot of athletes at Syracuse University. Mm. They're in my entrepreneurship courses, especially now with, you know, NIL, name, image, and likeness. And, you know, these college athletes can now monetize their NIL, which is great. So they're gravitating towards entrepreneurship. One of the things I've learned from them is that the idea of having a short memory is really important, right? So if you're an athlete and you make a bad play, you can't worry about that and think about it because you've got the next play to worry about, right? If you're beating yourself up over the mistake you just made, you're not going to be effective with the next play. So they have this thing, you know, they call it short memory, that they screw up, they get over it and they move on because they got another thing they got to worry about right now. And it's kind of like an entrepreneur, right? You can't dwell on the mistake you just made or the failure that just happened because you've got the next thing right in front of you that you've got to deal with. And that's something that we're really good at.
I love this. I'm on a tangent here, but do you know the J-Mac story from Greece Athena High School in Rochester, New York, the basketball story?
Yeah. Was it Coach Johnson, I think? I love that story. And, you know, because we work with kids with autism all the time. And that was, I mean, that was an incredible story. I love that.
Coach Jim Johnson, he's been on the show. He's an incredible guy. It's an incredible story. I'll put a link to the J-Mac story either on ESPN or Oprah. We'll maybe just post both in the description here. But what the reason that came up randomly, other than being ADHD and just having all these thoughts, like these connections happening, is it was, I think, 2.5 to 3.5 minutes that he was in the game. He scores over 20 points. a lot of people forget that his first shot was a total air ball. And and he, I don't know his exact amount, so I'm butchering it, but he shot, you know, under 80%, which is still incredible. And it was 60, 70 something percent, over 20 points in a few minutes. Kid on the autism spectrum, first game, varsity basketball game, comes in, just crushes it. National news attention. Everyone forgot that he didn't shoot 11 for 11. No one cared if he was perfect or not, because we as a nation, everyone, him especially, when he shot that first air ball, which was way off the mark, he could have been incredibly deflated, but he's like, team, throw me the ball, team, throw me the ball. And then he catches fire like Kobe Bryant and makes every single shot like 4 or 5 in a row.
Yeah.
Think about that short-term memory. I just missed that shot. Who cares?
Right. Yeah. You can't think about it in the next shot. You can't have it affect you. Right. So, and that ability to move on is very common with people with impulsive and hyperactive ADHD. And it's especially well suited for entrepreneurship and business in general.
So, tell us a little bit more. Where do we get the book? We're not closing, but I want to make sure that I bring this up midway through, because people are interested. Where do we find the book, and why'd you write it?
Sure. So you can find it on Amazon. You just search Lightning in a Bottle, John Torrens, and it'll pop right up. And I wrote it because, at the university, I got involved in a research project on entrepreneurship with ADHD. The guy who's next door, it's my office, a professor by the name of Johan Wicklund. He's one of the premier entrepreneurship researchers in the world. And this is an area that he really, he's passionate about it. And so we were just talking one day and we connected over that, because I'm kind of interested in it too, because I've been living it. So he researches it, I live it. And we said, hey, why don't we kind of team up and do a cool little study? So we did a little sample on some CEOs who were founder entrepreneurs. And, you know, the results were just amazing, how rampant ADHD is among founders of companies. Hmm. So, you know, that little research project turned into a TEDx talk. I think it's 4 years old and I've got 300 something thousand views, which, you know, is not insignificant, but I get emails daily of people who, hey, I just watched your talk. Do you have recommendations? What can I do? Wow. So I was like, all right, instead of just sending the same email over and over to people, I'm like, well, why don't I write a book about it? And it's not a super long book. It's just a real brief synopsis of the research, some of the things I've learned coaching young entrepreneurs with ADHD. Just figured, hey, there's something that you might be able to take away from this.
Yeah, no, that'll be in the show notes. John Torrens, Lightning in a Bottle. What were some of, people are watching the TEDx talk, 300,000, that is not insignificant at all. Congrats to you. People are obviously enjoying the talk and resonating with the message. What were some of the most frequently asked questions? Anything I haven't asked? What do people ask you all the time? And then let's answer it live here.
Sure. So in general, it's like, hey, do you have any recommendations or what can I do? And that's really broad and it's hard to do much with that, which is why I wrote the book, because, then somebody could find out what does apply to them. But besides that, one of the other common things I get is about medication. Do I medicate or do I not? And I don't generally give advice on that because I'm not a physician and I just don't think it's appropriate and everybody's different. But I do share my own experience, which wasn't really positive with medication. Although I know people who take medication, it took some time to find the right one, but it can certainly be profound in terms of the impact on the productivity in their business. But excuse me, for me, I found that it just kind of dampened what I was good at. And yes, it made me focus, but then I wasn't myself. I wasn't doing the things I was good at. I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't eating well. And there were a lot of other effects that I just didn't like. So I don't do medication, but both my kids had ADHD. They had success with some medication, but it just takes a while to dial it in and find the right one, the right dose, and that sort of thing. So that's a common question. And then the other one is just, you know, you've got a young person with ADHD and they've got all these ideas and opportunities, and they just need a little help corralling them and figuring out what's the next most impactful, most tangible action I can take to move towards this goal of new venture creation. And that seems to be a subset of questions that's really complex.
Let's talk about that specific example. So young entrepreneur, young adult, looking to start their new endeavor, have all these ideas. What are some of the first tangible actions you recommend someone do take to ensure it's the right move, and et cetera, et cetera? You tell me.
Most important one is to just start doing some validation and customer discovery. Because I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs, especially those with ADHD, they've just got these ideas that pop into their head all the time. Maybe they put them on a whiteboard or in a notebook, but that's where they stay. And then they wonder, well, how can I start any of these? And the natural response is, well, you've got to ask your target segment or your potential customers what they think. So hopefully you're solving a problem for them, and you're solving it in a way that's better than all of the next best alternatives that they have available to them. And you can't really know that unless either you are in the segment yourself, like you're solving a problem that you yourself experience, that you also know that there's a larger universe that experiences. But the other way to find it out is just access them and talk to them. Sit down, do a little interview, have a chat, that sort of thing. You've got to do that validation and discovery to know, A, is this a good idea, or am I solving a problem in a unique and novel and attractive way, or should I just scratch it, or am I onto something, but it just needs a tweak or an iteration? And you'll never know that unless you talk to people.
That's such a good point. You talk to people, and it feels good when you're getting gratification that what you're working on is actually resonating with people. And it kind of is a punch in the face when everyone's like, what, are you crazy? And crazy, right. Crazy ideas do work. But for me, I have to ask myself the question, can I see this through to make this crazy idea work? Or is this maybe not the best move for me?
Right. And that's also a good outcome. Like if you do your validation, you're asking people and all you're getting is, dude, what are you talking about? Then, you know, all right, crazy idea. I'll move on. Right. But maybe it just needs a little tweak, and you make the tweak and you move forward. So it really, it just depends. You've got to get that customer validation. You've got to understand what they want before you can move forward. Because the truth is, you never launch plan A. Ever, right? You don't just go to market with the idea that popped into your head because it's not fully developed. You've got to talk to people, you iterate on it. And it's so much better to go to market with the idea that has been through the ringer, because the market's going to tell you what they think of it, right? Whether you launch the product or the service and they tell you what they think, or they tell you what they think as you're developing it, and then you launch something that they'll actually want.
Makes perfect sense. I'm going to give you a case study of one example. I don't understand the science. A lot of what I do is based on intuition, but since you understand the science, tell me if this any makes sense or if it seems like the kind of thing that works. So I learned this from James Altucher. I write down 10 ideas a day every morning. When you multiply that, that's obviously over 3,600 ideas in a year, writing 10 ideas a day, 3,600 a year. What happens in 3, 5, 10, 20, 25 years? And originally, I would just get an idea and I just kind of try to do it all the time. But since I've been writing down 10 a day, a lot of times I forget what I wrote down a couple weeks ago. I'm just becoming an idea machine, but certain ideas become reoccurring. And the ones that become reoccurring that I can't really get my mind off of are the ones that I actually try to start implementing, or at least consider, because out of that 3,000 plus ideas, even if only 3 or 4 hit, that's more than enough to keep me busy for a year. Does anything that I just said make sense scientifically? What's your opinion on it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the science or research to support that, although something tells me somebody has researched that before. Sure. Although I know just anecdotally and from my own personal experience, I've been keeping a journal since 1990. Wow. And I love it. I love going back through and looking at, you know, crazy ideas that I had that I've actually executed or iterated on a little bit. And it's amazing to me how, you know, core things have stayed the same, although I've learned and grown as a person. But it's really insightful just to kind of see what you're dealing with as a, you know, 20-year-old guy versus a 55-year-old person. You know, it's just, it's really kind of cool. So, but yeah, no, I think keeping a, I mean, one of the things I tell my entrepreneurship students to do is to keep an idea journal, just to kind of go back and look. And I love what you said about the things that keep coming up, you know, the ones that keep rising to the top, those are the ones that maybe deserve your attention. And the other ones were just great to get down on paper, but, you know, maybe they just don't go anywhere, or at least their time's not right, you know?
So no dirty laundry needed to be exposed. But what do you write in your journal? Why do you keep a journal? It's not just a blab about some fight you had. So I mean, maybe it is. You tell me, what do you keep the journal for? What do you put in it? Why do you have it?
I think it's just to get things out of my head, right? Because sometimes I have trouble falling asleep because things are just going through my head. So I think part of it is a strategy just to get it out of my head and down on a paper. But you know, when it changed over the years, right? When I was younger, before I was married, it was usually about, you know, relationships and this girl or that girl, right? And then it was like my job hunt. Then, you know, early on in my career, it was all about my money stress and how I don't have any money. I can't do this or I can't do that. And then, you know, it's about the growth of the business and the problems I'm experiencing then. But then, you know, I also write about, you know, some fun things I've done. It's really just kind of a stream of consciousness, whatever I'm thinking of at the time. Although I do notice that I write a lot more when times are difficult. So when I'm struggling with things, that's when I tend to write more. And I think it's because it helps me gain clarity on whatever it is I'm struggling with. So that's a topic I like as I flip through these things. I mean, I've got boxes of these things. I like to write. I don't like to type in my journal. I like to physically write. But I flip through and, you know, sometimes there's like a month lapse between entries, but other times it's like almost every day. And the more frequent the entries are, it usually correlates with a more difficult time in my life.
That makes sense. So it doesn't have to be 8 a.m., three ideas. It doesn't have to be regimented.
No.
It can be there for when you need it to really get the information stream of consciousness out during difficult times. This might be a tough question. Tell me if you remember. Do you recall why you got into journaling in the first place? Because nowadays I feel like in business and entrepreneurship, it's like almost trendy and cliche. But you were journaling in the 90s. Do you recall why you got your start?
Yeah. It's kind of a silly reason, but I had an epic summer. Like, me and a bunch of guys from college, we moved to Nantucket for the summer. We got this crappy little house. We all got these hard jobs, but we were college kids in Nantucket for the summer. And we had a blast. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is a summer I really want to remember because it was epic. I was walking through Nantucket. If anybody's ever been there, you know how charming Main Street is. And there was this cool little journal. I'm like, I'm going to get that and I'm going to write about my summer. And I honestly thought that was going to be it. It was just going to be the journal of my summer. And I'd pack it in a box somewhere and never think about it again. But, you know, I just kept going. And so there are sometimes, I think the biggest lapse in entries is 3 months. Usually it's 4 days. You know, something like that. But, a couple times a week, I'll write. But yeah, I basically wanted to record this amazing summer I had as a kid. And it just kept going.
I love it. Starts with an amazing summer. You don't know. Yeah, I have this issue where there's always needs to be a plan. There needs to be a North Star, an end in sight, an end in mind. You just picked up in journal just to talk about your rockin' summer. And it changes your life as you evolve, as you go. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, and I used to be like that too, where like you kind of needed this focus or North Star, but what I've realized is you never get it all done. Right. I mean, what are you going to do when you get it all done? What are you done with? Done with life what do you do next? Right. So like in my mind, I'm never going to be done. And for some people that sounds exhausting, but for me, it's exciting. It's growth oriented. I'm never going to be done. I don't necessarily know what I'm going to be doing in 5 years, but I'll figure it out when I get there, right? And hopefully it's going to be something that lights me up, fills me with joy, gives me meaning in my life, and that will be good enough.
Love it. John, in a moment, we're going to do the rapid fire round, random, short, sweet questions, but I want to give you time on this one. What is lighting you up right now, and or what is like in that vision for the future? Like, what is the biggest thing you're working on right now that we can pay attention for and or support you in any way?
Yeah, I mean, so, well, right now my focus is, I mean, because, you know, I just turned 54 last summer. So, of course, health is something that's always on your mind. So I've been taking a really deep dive into health and longevity science, incorporating some of those practices. And the other, so both of my kids live in Costa Rica. My adult children live there and work there now. So my wife and I are building a house there. And I think, I kind of see my future heading in that direction where, we're looking at purchasing a really big plot of land there. Wow. To maybe build this little, a little sustainable community or something, just to have a little farmland. Because I think, there's this thing in my head where I just keep going back to wanting, not necessarily to be a farmer, but to have land and live simply enough where, I'll get everything I need, but it's not complicated.
I love that. What a beautiful vision. In Costa Rica, that's a beautiful place, isn't it?
Love it there. I mean, we've been taking the kids there for over 20 years. And so, it makes sense that once they became adults that, so my son went there to study and he married a Costa Rican woman. My daughter, she got a work from anywhere job and she decided to work from there. And, they live really close to where we're building. I've got a really great network of friends and people and, my son's in-laws that I'm close with. And it's just a nice thing. And, it's one of the planet's blue zones where there's the most centenarians anywhere in the world. And it's the simple lifestyle. It's the daily movement that they engage in. It's the foods they eat. But a big part of it also is just the community. Right. Everybody is, they've got a really good community and that's a big part of living a longer, healthier, more fulfilling life. So that's kind of where I'm headed. I feel like I've done the hustle and grind thing of entrepreneurship. I've done pretty well for myself. And now it's time to, just kind of set things up. So, I've got a very simple but fulfilling and joyful life.
Costa Rica, that I'm adding travel to Costa Rica on the list. Let's imagine whether it's Costa Rica or somewhere else, even you've retired, you've accomplished a million things. Can you sit back possibly with a cocktail or water and just watch the water for days on end? Or do you see yourself working and creating till death do you part from this earth?
Yeah, no, there's no way on this earth that I'm going to retire, right? I mean, I don't play golf. Nobody has shuffleboard anymore, that kind of thing. So I'm going to work until I can. And I think that's just part of who I am. And when I say work, I mean, I teach in our online MBA program. And then that's technically work, but it's not especially physically demanding. And it's very intellectually stimulating. I mean, I learn a lot from my MBA students every week. So that's probably what I'm going to do. Besides, maybe working the land and doing something cool there. I mean, I've been looking at like coffee and cacao farms as a buying opportunity. So, I could end up being a coffee or cacao exporter or whatever. So I'm going to work because honestly, what else am I going to do? I like to start my day with a surf session, come home, have a good breakfast, then I'll work for a few hours and, maybe go surf again. And that's probably what it's going to look like.
John's the surfer, the cacao coffee farmer.
Who knows?
I asked that kind of jokingly in my head because the thought of like sitting back and relaxing for more than like at let's just use two hands worth of days, like the thought of relaxing for years on end makes me want to go crazy a little bit.
Yeah, and there I read something somewhere where you die shortly after you stop doing anything. I mean, you need a purpose to get out of bed. You need something meaningful to do. And I'm not saying that people who are retired don't have that, but for me, retiring and sitting in my rocking chair in the porch is just never going to do it for me.
Same. We're going to do rapid fire. These are short, sweet. Some are either or, fill in the blank. You can pass. I joke that it's like Family Feud that we want to move quickly. But it's like, whose line is it anyway, though? The points don't matter, completely subjected to whatever John wants to say. Let's start off with coffee or tea.
Coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Let's change it up and do some weird ones today. Music or podcasts when you're on a drive or a stroll?
50-50. Totally depends.
Same. Yeah. You mentioned you like journaling with an actual pen, pencil paper. Do you use ebooks, or are you still into the hardcover classic book?
Yeah, I need a hard copy.
Cool. Who is one of your heroes and why?
I've always had this really weird obsession with Ben Franklin. He's like the original American entrepreneur, right? He's just, you know, so many things kind of get traced back to Ben Franklin. I've always had this weird thing with him.
So we mentioned surfing, not golfing. What else didn't we, just something about John, weekend, relax, doing something with the family or for himself. Where might we spot you out in the wild? What do you like to do for fun?
So I like to swim, bike, and run. Not run as much. I like to swim and bike more, but you know, I like to do tri sports, although mostly sprint distance, not anything longer, just because I'm not a maniac. But yeah.
Sweet, man. Yep. Anyone at home who, whether they have ADHD, they feel like they might, whether either or something resonated, what do you recommend we do next? So if I were to grab my huge pencil here, if I were to grab my pencil and write down some homework, what do you recommend I do as me or the listener to take everything we learned today and actually start taking action to better ourselves long term? What do you recommend?
One of the most effective things you can do, especially if you have ADHD, is to incorporate some sort of mindfulness practice. Right. Which, and it makes sense, right? You're paying attention to the way you're paying attention almost, right? You're focusing on something different. So mindfulness practice, probably the single most important thing, not only for your focus and productivity, but even just for your physical health. That's probably the biggest one. But then I would do an audit of your consumption. What kind of information are you taking in? How do you take it in? What are you putting in your mouth? What are you eating? And what are you drinking? And, how do you feel about that? Is there anything that can go? Those are two places I would start.
Mindfulness, audit your consumption. I'll add, check out your TED Talk. What's the name of the TED Talk?
It's, I believe it's entrepreneurship. No, ADHD is an entrepreneur superpower.
Hey, and we'll find it, put it in the show notes. And the name of the book, if I want to go grab that.
Lightning in a Bottle, how entrepreneurs can harness their ADHD to win.
Anything else that we didn't just mention that we can do to support you? Any places we should go to make a friend? You tell us.
No, this is great. I mean, I've had a lot of fun talking to you, and yeah, hopefully people got something they can use.
Appreciate you taking the time, John. I had fun as well. Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. You gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend, and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.